Once we had given Surveille a decent moment of silence, Ayla went on. So imagine this from the point of view of the big bosses inside the conference room. They see a large number of their people converted to floating corpses before their eyes. There's nothing they can do about it. Fra Osa trudges right up to the window and slaps on a shaped charge right up against the glass. They're not certain what it is. He makes a gesture. The world burner explodes in three places: the primary detonator, the inertial guidance system, and the propellant tanks. There is a huge secondary detonation as the tanks rupture.
That we noticed.
Fra Gratho is killed by a piece of flying debris.
Oh, damn it.
My eyes were stinging.
He stood between me and a bullet.
I know, she said softly. After another silence, she went on. So the bosses now understand the nature of the object that's been slapped on their window. They get the message and open an airlock. Esma comes inside. Osa stays where he is. He's the gun to their heads. Esma stays in her suit. She herds all the geometers she can find into the conference room, locks the door, welds it shut with Saint Loy's powder. Now Osa joins her, bringing the shaped charge with him. They lock the doors into the vertex, sealing it off from the rest of the Dabanernud, and weld those too. They detonate the fourth charge in such a way that most of the vertex vents its atmosphere to space. Now it can't be approached except by people in spacesuits. They hole up in one of the few rooms that still has an atmosphere. Their suits are out of air now, so they climb out of them and suffer the usual symptoms.
What is up with that, by the way?
She shrugged.
Hemoglobin is a classy molecule, finely tuned to do what it does. Take oxygen from the lungs and get it to every cell in the body. If you give it oxygen that is only a little bit different from what it's used to, well, it still works, just not as well. It's like being at high altitude. You get short of breath, woozy, can't think straight.
Hallucinations?
Maybe. Why, did you hallucinate?
Never mind. But wait a second. Jules can get along just fine on Arb air.
You acclimatize. Your body responds by generating more red blood cells. After a week or two, you can handle it. So, as an example, some of the people who live on Dabanernud rarely leave their home orb. They have trouble going into common areas of the ship where the air is a mixture. Others are used to it.
Like the Phothosian cosmographer who let us in the airlock at the observatory.
Exactly. When she saw you guys gasping for breath and starting to lose consciousness, she recognized what was going on. Sounded an alarm.
She did? I said.
She gave me that pitying but affectionate look again. What, you were hoping you'd manage to sneak aboard?
I thought we had done exactly that.
She grabbed my hand and kissed it. I think your ego can be satisfied by what you did accomplish, which people are going to be celebrating for a long time.
Okay, I said, feeling it was time to change the subject away from my ego. She sounded an alarm.
Yes. Of course, there were lots of other alarms going off at the same time because of the Veiler's mayhem, Ayla said. But some medics came to the observatory and found you unconscious, but alive. Fortunately for you, the physicians around here are used to dealing with such problems. They put you on oxygen, which seemed to help, but they had no way to be sure. They'd never treated Arbrans. They were worried you were going to suffer brain damage. Better safe than sorry. So they put you on ice in a hyperbaric chamber.
On ice?
Yeah, literally. Dropped your body temperature to limit brain damage while oxygenating your blood as best they could with Lateran air. You've been unconscious for a week.
What about Osa and Desma? Hold up in that vertex.
She let a long moment pass before saying, Well, Raz, they died. The Ernudans figured out where they were, blew a hole in the wall. All the air escaped into space.
I lay there for a minute.
Well, I finally said,
I guess they went out like real Veilers.
Yes.
I laughed in a not funny way.
And, like a true non-Veiler, I lived.
And I'm glad you did.
And here she started crying again. It wasn't sadness over the dead Veilers. nor joy that the rest of us had lived. It was shame and hurt that she had sent us into a situation where we easily could have died, that the responsibilities placed on her shoulders and the logic of the situation had left her no alternative to the terrible decision. For the rest of her life, of our life, I hoped, she'd be waking up, sweaty, in the middle of the night over this. But it was a hurt she'd have to keep to herself, since most people she might share it with would not extend her much sympathy. You sent your friends to do what? While you sat on the ground, safe? So it was going to be a private thing between us, I knew, forever. I squirmed free and held her for a bit.